This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A new documentary called Dead Blue, Surviving Depression, looks at how depression transforms the people who are suffering with it and how that affects their families. Two of the people who discuss their own bouts with depression are journalist Mike Wallace and writer William Styron, who's the author of a memoir about barely surviving his depression. Here's Mike Wallace speaking in the film.
New York City. So much is going on, all the energy and so forth, and you want to turn your back on it because the sunshine means nothing to you at all. Matter of fact, I rather liked gray days. For me, anyway. Seasons didn't make any difference. Friends didn't make any difference. Good food didn't make any difference. Nothing of that sort. It was all you focus on is yourself and how bad you feel. And you don't care about what's going on outside. You don't.
The documentary Dead Blue was directed by Ames Yates, Mike Wallace's stepson. It will be shown on HBO Tuesday, January 6th. My guests are Mary Wallace, Mike Wallace's wife, and Rose Styron, who's married to William Styron. Each speaks in the film about the impact of her husband's depression on their marriage. Mary Wallace says that during her husband's depression, he became like a stranger, as if he turned into somebody else. I asked her to describe some of the ways he was transformed during his depression.
He really changed completely in that he was so down about everything and so negative and uncommunicative, which he's a very good communicator, and so discouraged about everything. And that's how he changed. It was just an entirely different person.
Rose Styron, did you feel like your husband, William Styron, became like a stranger to you during his depression?
In a way, yes, but in a way, no. I think his depression had been coming on for many, many years, and he seemed to get more and more remote and uncommunicative. So when this happened, it was an enlargement of a process that had already begun. But what I found was there was no way to reach him and get him out of it. He took no pleasure in anything. There was no laughter, no joking, there was no personality there whatsoever. And so while I first thought it was just a worsening of what had already been there, I suddenly realized that there was a person missing. He wasn't there.
Mary Wallace, your husband, Mike Wallace, in the documentary talks about basically how self-absorbed he knows he became during his depression, how nothing going on outside of his head mattered to him at all. Did you interpret that, before you really understood what was happening, did you interpret that as selfishness, as a lack of interest in you?
Oh, you take, when this happens the first time, even the second time or any time, even if intellectually you understand it, you do feel it's all your fault because there's, as Rose says, you can't bring them out of it. And the first thought is, what am I doing wrong? Why isn't it working? You know, that's the thing. You blame yourself for it.
You certainly do. You blame yourself for at least 80% of it.
Did you each try in your own way to bring your husband out of the depression or to try to encourage them to get to see a doctor?
Of course. And he went to see one doctor after another. And the diagnoses were not correct, and the medicines were too much and in conflict. And then, of course, I wanted him to go to a hospital, but we had to wait a bit for that.
Were they treating depression, or were they treating physical manifestations of the depression?
In the beginning, they were all treating physical manifestations, and there were different ones, and none of them seemed to have a clue as to what it really was.
What were they, like exhaustion, headaches, that kind of thing?
Exhaustion and headaches were only the beginning of it, but imagined or real symptoms in every part of the body drove him back and back to different doctors.
There's a lot of physical pain, at least in Mike's case. His arms hurt and his legs
mm-hmm.
hurt. And so one immediately thinks, well, maybe something's wrong with his back or, you know, the nerves in his body or something.
and all the organs didn't seem to function properly. So there were a lot of doctors who looked at different organs.
And then another thing that happens is sleeplessness. So you think there's some problem there, loss of appetite. So, you know, all sorts of things go through your mind that could be wrong.
And sleeplessness leads to all kinds of medications which contribute to worse depression.
When you each got the diagnosis for your husband of clinical depression, did that change your outlook on your husband's behavior?
Well, it certainly, it changed mine.
This is Mary Wallace speaking.
Yes.
And it changed mine also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was relieved to find out that there was one thing that was wrong, and I was told that it was treatable. So it was a vast relief. It was particularly relief for all our kids, for everyone in the family, to put a name to something that had seemed a personal thing to them, too. And also, we were so ignorant about what was happening that Bill was convinced he would never get out of it. And he convinced me of the same thing.
And I think that all people in a clinical depression think it will never, ever end, ever. They just can't see a bright side to anything, it seems.
Do you think it ended because of medication?
It did in our case, in Mike's case, and he has said 1,000 times he will never stop taking that medication.
I think Bill's was helped by the proper medication, but most helped by isolation for 7 weeks in a hospital where he didn't have to perform or put a face on. He could just relax into his misery and let the doctors do whatever they needed to, and eventually the depression lifted.
Is it very difficult continuing to love and to help someone who is becoming so withdrawn as to almost be indifferent to you?
Yes, it's very
it is hard
not to like them at all anymore. As we said earlier, it's a different person. And mm-hmm. you just can wake up and say, my gosh, I don't even like him anymore.
Well, how did you handle that? I mean, you both stuck with your husbands through the depression.
We did, but most people don't.
It's very important that you stick with him. That would be certainly my advice,
mm-hmm.
to see it through, since we now know that most depressions do lift, which we didn't know 12 or 13 years ago when this all began. I would certainly say, you know, stick around, because the person does come back to you and comes back better. I'd been married for so long, and our life was so entwined in our family and our country living, and there was no question in my mind of leaving.
How long are we talking? How long did it take in your husband's cases for the depression to lift?
Well, from the time it began, although I didn't know what it was, until it lifted totally, I would say about 8 months.
I think that's about 6 or 8 months for Mike, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What impact did it have on your self-esteem and self-confidence during this period when you weren't, when your husband wasn't responding toward you, wasn't giving you the kind of, like...
Well, it just totally shatters you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Your self-esteem goes right where his goes.
And I would think if somebody had already low self-esteem, which neither of us have, boy...
Speak for yourself, Mary.
it would be terrible.
Why did your husband's depression's impact on your own self-esteem?
Why did it? Well, somebody tells you 100 times a day that everything you do is wrong, and that you know, your house is horrible and you're no fun, and that, I mean, that's how it impacts on you. It just does.
And if there's no way that you can persuade them ever to do anything that you would like to do or that you think would be, you know, pleasing for family, friends, or them, and you just get a flat negative response, then your sense of yourself and your worth goes down to the cellar.
What would you do to protect yourselves when you were feeling most depressed as a result of living with a very depressed husband?
Well, I would go take a a walk with my daughter or go commune with nature or invite a friend or two in, hoping it would help. That was the only protection I had from isolation.
I think the good thing, I didn't do it, but I think a very, very good advice would be to go to a psychiatrist yourself or a psychologist and talk about depression.
I agree with you.
If you're living with a depressed person, you really get depressed yourself. And it may not be a clinical depression, but you should go and talk to somebody. Or in my case, I formed a group of women who had husbands who were depressed. And we hired a psychiatrist, and the four or five of us would go and talk to each other, and the psychiatrist would sort of lead us for an hour or two once a week. And that really helped to not be isolated yourself.
My guests are Rose Styron and Mary Wallace, who along with their husbands, writer William Styron and journalist Mike Wallace, speak in the new documentary Dead Blue, Surviving Depression. It will be shown January 6th on HBO. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Rose Styron and Mary Wallace. We're discussing the impact of their husband's depression on their marriages. They and their husbands, writer William Styron and journalist Mike Wallace, describe their experiences in the new documentary Dead Blue, Surviving Depression. From the film, here's William Styron describing depression.
I would say that the closest description I can think of to the overall sense that you have when you are suffering from depression is to be condemned to life. You're condemned to life. It's as if life itself was so painful and so without pleasure or joy, much less joy, that it's a form of a condemnation to be in this state of existence.
Let's get back to our interview with Rose Styron and Mary Wallace. Now, I know you both believe it's important when you're in a family with somebody who's seriously depressed to realize that you're not alone, that this is a condition, it's an illness, and you're not the only one suffering through this. There are certain patterns. But when you were going through it with your husbands, did you want to protect them by keeping it a secret? And therefore, were you cut off from being able to communicate with other people about the problem?
Well, you certainly are cut off because they don't want to see anybody. So you become more and more remote, the two of you, and more and more together, but alone. And you're getting it all the time from them. And that's what's so hard, because you just retire from your friends and everything else. They don't want to be around them either.
But it's slightly different in each case, because Bill's was coming on a long time. It seemed to me I was getting the negative stuff from him for a long time, and when he was really down at the bottom and really needed me, then he was extremely nice, and I got very positive feedback, which, you know, made me sad and certainly made me love him, but didn't give me a clue as to how I could help.
Mm-hmm. But were there things that you had to do to compensate for their lack of energy?
I often had to call people at the last minute and say we weren't coming and make excuses.
Yes, I did a lot of that, too.
And you end up, it's almost like living with an alcoholic, I would imagine, where they just don't show up at the last minute, you know, and they don't want to go, and you do tend to make excuses for them.
Well, Bill had a doctor who told him he should go ahead and do everything that no matter how awful he felt, going to whatever public function he had promised to go to was good for him, and it was not, and we went to a lot of things which were just a disaster because he was trying and couldn't make it, and the whole time in his head he was thinking that he, you know, wanted out of this life, but there he was. And when it was private things, then of course we didn't go, and I made the excuses.
Mary, your son, who is Mike Wallace's stepson, says in his movie about depression that he didn't find out about Mike Wallace's condition until much later.
Yeah. Well, nobody did. Mike went to work every day.
Right.
Almost.
Right.
And he was able to do that. He did it by rote. You know, he just did what he always does. And so, but he was able to do that. But then that's the other thing that can happen is, in his case, he could go out and appear perfectly normal, although he was in a great deal of pain, but then he'd come home, and that's when he'd let go. And I wondered, why are you so nice to everybody, and then you talk to me this way?
Yeah,
a thing that's just awful.
It really is awful. But Bill, being a writer, just went into his office every day and didn't produce any good writing. But since he takes so long to write a book anyway, I think the outside world wasn't aware of anything, except when I tried to force social life on him or the doctor tried to force public life on him. Then it was absolutely apparent.
Your husbands, William Styron and Mike Wallace, they're both very smart people. They're both very articulate people. They're both in the position of framing things either through fiction or through journalism. Did they take their own depressions and intellectualize them into an almost like philosophy of life so that it didn't become a problem they had to deal with, but rather like a worldview that they could turn into a little philosophy?
That's very good. It's a good question, and I hadn't thought of it before, but I think that's true. It was a very negative philosophy. It was no longer just individual gripes with things that were happening in the world. It was a total negative philosophy, nihilism, if you will, that took over.
I'm wondering if your husband's ever went through, you know, suicidal periods, and if so, how you dealt with that or what advice you were given on how to deal with that.
Well, I was told by the doctor, who I thought was a very misguided doctor, that if he was suicidal, which he was, I would call periodically and say, look, you know, he wants to kill himself, that's all he's thinking about, can I bring him to the hospital? And the doctor would say, oh no, just don't let him out of your sight. And that's very bad advice.
Very bad.
What would the better advice have been?
Bring him to the hospital or go to a psychiatrist yourself and find out how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But bring him to the hospital is what I think it would
be. I think if you can realize that you haven't caused the depression and you really can't do anything about it, but you can get them help from the right person, and that's the only thing that's going to help them, and stand by them, of course. But you can't make them well yourself.
How long has it been for each of you since this really bad depression that your husband went through?
No, it was 1985.
That's a long time ago.
That's 12 years.
Yeah.
Both of them. They were, you know, within a month or two of each other.
No, I believe both of your husbands are still on medication, yes?
No, mine is not.
Mine is.
Do you ever feel like you see glimmers of that depressed person peeking through the more healthy person now?
Definitely. The interesting thing is that he sees it too. And so we can anticipate it a little bit, and it doesn't go where it might have because we know so much more now and we're able to balance it. You know, the one time that he had another little depression and it was, you know, medical anxiety that began it, then he had to have medication again. But since we understood the symptoms and what was happening, I got him to a hospital early.
So has it only been one more episode?
For us, yes.
And Mary Wallace, what about with you?
Mike has had two more episodes.
And were they as bad?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, because we knew more then. I'll tell you, no matter how much you know, when it happens, you might think you know everything. There's not anything a clinically depressed person can do except go and get some help.
And you've answered this a little bit, but I'm wondering if you feel that, you know, living with a man who is prone to depression has affected your own moods and your own personalities.
Yes, I think it has with me. I think I tended to be a little more serene and a little bit more of a constant optimist. And it's, of course, caused a great deal of my own self-examination. I think after his depression, I was pretty down myself for a while, but luckily I have a lot of very supportive grown-up kids, and they sort of helped me out of that, as did Bill. But yes, I think it's definitely changed my personality. It's made me more cautious. It's made me want to stay home and close to Bill more than I would have before. It's made me say no to things I might have said yes to that it would have taken me far off for a long period, because I work abroad a great deal with human rights, and I don't go in for all the stuff I used to.
And Mary Wells, how do you think, you know, living with depression, someone else's depression, has affected your own moods and your own personality?
Well, I had never known anybody like that. It just, it's another dimension entirely, and you can recognize it in other people sometimes. It's just a whole new dimension in life, and I think good things have come out of it for all of us. I know Mike is very much more understanding of other people's problems
and so is Bill.
So that's good.
Well, I really want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. This has been very interesting.
Rose Styron and Mary Wallace. They and their husbands, William Styron and Mike Wallace, are among the people profiled in the new documentary, Dead Blue, Surviving Depression, which will be shown on HBO Tuesday, January 6th. Coming up, Christmas on South Park. This is Fresh Air.